This is 6 feet underwater, I do look up to you. A Star Wars Legends, Knights of the Old Republic, video games, fanfic. Written by Revan Kist and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated PG-13 and contains the pairing Alec, Revan, Darth Malak, Darth Revan. With additional tags for The Betrayal Scene, TM. Heavy angst. Unhappy ending. Established relationship. Unhealthy relationships. Pre-Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. Tragedy. I blame Linkin Park for this. Minutes to Midnight was my soundtrack for writing this stupid fic. Canonical character death. I mean, sort of death? It's Revan. She's not actually dead, everyone knows that. Name and mask symbolism galore. Why is Rev Alec so tragic? I'm sobbing. They're small, 9 or 10 maybe, running through knee-high grass on Dantooine, surrounded by the rustling of the wind and the mournful baying of Cath hounds and the bright sound of laughter. Brooke had kept them late after class again to scold them for climbing onto the roof of the Enclave, had assigned them both extra chores and extra meditation, and Revan has been sulking ever since, which Alec understands. Brooke doesn't like him, sure, because he lives in Revan's shadow, but he hates Revan. Is always finding something wrong with her to get angry at her for. Someday, Alec will find a way to make Brooke eat all his words, to make him feel everything he's made Revan feel since she was 5 and they were sneaking out of the creche together. But for now, he has to be content with following Revan, as she sprints out into a wide space between 2 cliffs and stops, flops down on her back, and stares up at the sky. I hate him, Squint, she says forlornly, and there's not much of her usual anger in her voice today.
I know,
Alec says, dropping down to sit next to her. Bits of dark hair are starting to slip out of her neat box braids. She'll need to redo them soon. And she's closed her green eyes, and there's a furrow in her forehead he doesn't like. He doesn't like seeing her upset, wishes they could just spend all their days here on the plains, where none of the masters can look at them, where there's no meditation and no chores and no scoldings, where Revan is happy.
We'll get him back for it someday, you know.
Of course we will, Revan says. Turns her head towards him and opens her eyes. I'm going to be the best Jedi they've ever seen, and even Vrook will have to say it. I'll prove to him that I deserve this. Alec grins down at her, reaches over with one hand to tap her nose, and she wrinkles her face at him.
If you're the best, what does that make me?
He asks, as she brings up a hand to swat at his before tangling their fingers together.
Second best, obviously, she informs him,
and he grins wider.
I'm going to change the whole galaxy someday, and you're going to be right next to me, aren't you? Is that even a question?
Alec asks, squeezes her hand.
And he wishes he could just live forever in the warmth of this moment. Don't be stupid, Rev. I'm always going to be with you. I promise.
Revan sits up, a bright smile crossing her face.
I promise too, she says. No matter what happens, we're always going to be together. Nothing could ever change that.
Malik stares down at his hands, flexing them, like he could chase away the shadow of Revan's small hand in his, the way her fingers had tightened around his when she promised, so solemnly despite the smile, that they'd always be together.
Nothing could ever change that, she'd said, and he'd believed her back then.
Oh, the perspective 20 years and 2 wars brings. He hasn't seen Revan's face outside of dreams in 2 months. Since the last time he'd been on the Vengeance, and they'd curled up together on her bunk. And even then, she'd buried her face in his shoulder like she didn't want him to see it. And the mask had been so close at hand. She stopped letting him see her face around the time he asked for his own command. And maybe that's his fault, but she can't expect him to sit in her shadow forever, can she? She's the one who named him Darth, who named him her apprentice, and it is the Sith way for the apprentice to eventually succeed the master. And it hasn't been so long that he's forgotten the way her lightsaber came crashing at his face, the way she would have cleaved straight through his jaw, all because of her anger, all because he couldn't follow her orders. Once upon a time, she'd trusted him to make his own decisions, to the point where anything and everything he said was considered her own words. Somehow, their empire still sees him like that. Like nothing more than Revan's right hand. Revan's mouthpiece. Revan's shadow. Despite the fact that he hasn't let her pass the surface of his mind in a year. And despite the fact that he has his own flagship. And despite the fact that Saul Kareth asked to be stationed with him instead of her. He knows why. The man wants power, follows those he believes will give it to him. And he expects Malak to move, just like Bandon does, just like most of the Sith do. To them, it's an inevitability. He doesn't need Revan, not really. She's always been the one who needed him, who is desperate for him to be her absolution and her forgiveness and her redemption, when he could barely wash his own hands of the blood he'd spilled for the Republic and for her. They'd clung to each other in the dark, and he'd promised her it was necessary, just like she promised herself. And at some point, he stopped waiting for her to try and reassure him. So he's never needed her. And he could do this on his own. Could conquer the Republic. Could lead an empire. Could defend the galaxy against Vitiate. Malik loves Revan. Has loved her since they were children. Has been in love with her since they were teenagers. Driving a stolen speeder across Coruscant. But somewhere between Malachor and Vitiate. Between the Starforge and the Sith Academy. It's no longer enough to love her. The resentment has been building like a poison since she named herself his master. And no matter what she does, no matter what he does, there's no way to bleed that poison away. Because somewhere in the last 7 years of war, the Revan he loves has vanished behind the mask and the title. And he doesn't know how to get her back. He no longer knows if he even wants to get her back.
He has spent his entire life in her shadow. Second best. Only ever an afterthought to the rest of the galaxy. He wants more. And he'll never get it as long as she is alive. His comm chirps.
Lord Malik.
And it's one of his officers.
You're needed on the bridge. A Republic fleet just came out of hyperspace.
And as if to punctuate their words, the Leviathan rocks around him. He's already pushing to his feet, grabbing the cortosis weave half-mask he started wearing when they went back to war.
I'm on my way,
he says.
Get Kareth onto the bridge.
Understood, sir,
the officer says. And the line goes dead. Malik settles his black cape around his shoulders and leaves his room behind for the nearest turbolift to the bridge. The Republic fleet shouldn't be here. They don't have the forces to challenge Revan directly. That much has been obvious from the start. They'd only had a year to recover from Malachor, and when he and Revan came back to the galaxy, half the Republic had defected to follow them. Revan is their hero, of course, their savior, their legend. Why wouldn't they follow her? But it means that they don't have the manpower or the ships for head-on battles. So what could they hope to accomplish here? By the end of the Mandalorian Wars, Revan had been 3/4 of the Republic's fleet on her own. Had, with his help, held together the entire war with her fingertips and her Durasdil determination. Her refusal to fail. To lose. Without her, the Republic hadn't known what to do. They hadn't known how to defend themselves against a threat, because she'd won them the last war entirely on her own. And after Malachor, they'd never thought they'd have to fight without her. Never thought they'd have to fight her. It's been all they've been able to manage to just try and defend against her. To try and buy time. They haven't attempted to launch an attack before. It's suicidal. They'd lose too many ships and too much manpower. And they'd barely scratch the surface of Revan's fleet. And sure, he has heard whispers from his informants in the Republic about the Jedi joining the war. About a Padawan with battle meditation. But that's not enough to balance the cost this attack will take. The size of the fleet they've got arrayed against him and Revan. Malik looks over the projection his officers already have up on the holotable the moment he steps onto the bridge. This is most of their fleet. They're risking nearly everything on an attack within striking distance of a planet Revan and Malik have already conquered. And for what? They aren't going to win. What could possibly make this worth it? Unless... Oh. Oh. It's a trap. Of course. Revan will have seen it too. Probably before he did. She's the master tactician, after all. He's sure she'll laugh at it with him later. Laugh at the audacity of the Republic and the Jedi to think they could set a trap for her. If they play this right, they could destroy or otherwise incapacitate 2/3 of the Republic fleet in one battle. Leaving them a nearly straight shot to Coruscant, winning the entire galaxy in just months. And then what? Revan will be the most powerful woman in the galaxy. And he will be her right hand. Her shadow, once again. They'll rebuild, and turn the full might of the conquered Republic on Vitiate. And if they succeed, Revan will still be, will always be, the mask. And he will be nothing more than her apprentice.
who speaks for her instead of himself. He will always be the silent half of their whole. Saul Carath steps onto the bridge and walks up to the holotable, uniform neat as ever, and there's a gleam in his eyes, one that would set Malak on edge if he didn't see it in all his Sith, in Bandon every time he spends any time teaching his own apprentice. "Lord Malak," the Admiral says, "I've just gotten a report from one of my spies in the fleet. A Jedi strike team boarded a shuttle that appears to be bound for the Vengeance. Should we shoot it down?" Malak pauses. "This is the Republic's trap, then. Jedi sent after Revan. Of course they're going after Revan. If he died, what would that accomplish? Hardly anything, really. Oh, Revan would be broken up over it for a little while, would be furious, would take that out on the Republic. But it wouldn't halt her advance, would just encourage it, in fact. It wouldn't protect them. Because in the end, Malak is just steady, loyal Alec. And Revan is Revan."
"No,"
he says, one hand clenching into a fist.
"She's the one who named herself a master. Let her prove that."
Carath is smiling. "I wholeheartedly agree, my lord. In fact, this could be an opportunity for us, if you have the ambition to seize it." His eyes sharpen, and Malak grits his teeth behind the mask, looks back to the projection. He can see what Revan's doing with their fleet, her strategy, can see the openings she's deliberately leaving for him to fill. And he turns to one of his officers, barks an order to get their fighters into the battle, to send out their light cruisers, before looking back to Carath.
"This is already opportunity enough,"
he says.
"We'll decimate the Republic's fleet today, and they won't be able to protect Coruscant. The Republic will fall in months.
And Lord Revan will rule the galaxy," Carath says. Malak forces himself not to react, to continue to stare at the fleet projections. But the words mirror too well the thoughts he's been fighting for weeks now. Revan will rule the galaxy, and he will be nothing in the face of that. "Her power, her control, will be absolute."
"How do you think Revan would react if I let her see this conversation?"
Malak asks, low, and it's meant to be a threat, because he knows what Carath is suggesting, knows the ambition he means. And coming from anyone other than Revan's apprentice, that is treason. But Carath just laughs quietly. "Lord Malak," he says, "we both know you wouldn't do that. It would mean admitting to your plans."
"I don't have plans."
Malak's fist tightens more, and he stares at the vivid blue projection of the Vengeance. "No, that would be a shame, given that Lord Revan's treated you less like an apprentice and more like a tool as of late. Given that she's hardly seemed to grow in power, while you, my lord, have." Carath takes a step closer, and in Malak's peripheral vision, his eyes are fever bright. "Is it not the way of the Sith for the apprentice to turn on the master when the master has outlived her use to him?" Malak hesitates for a moment. "Revan is his everything.
His lover, his best friend, his partner. The relationship isn't about use. Isn't it? He hasn't seen her smile since before he asked for the Leviathan. Holding each other curled up at night is as much a habit as it is a relationship. She doesn't let him see past the mask, and he doesn't try to. And she tried to kill him. And she called him her apprentice, like he didn't hold her fleet together with his bare hands whenever she went off on some reckless crusade during the Mandalorian Wars, like he didn't stand in a blood-soaked jungle on Duxon and order 10,000 deaths while she played the hero on Isis, like he didn't stand at her side against the Jedi Council after Cathar and after Malachor, like he isn't every bit her equal. She counts on his loyalty and his familiarity with her to have her back in every battle, and she doesn't bother to thank him after. How is that not using him? And if she is the one who started this, and she is, she's the one who broke them apart, who has always, always led while he followed behind. If she's the one who used him first, then... It's your right as a Sith Lord to take the power you deserve. Kareth continues, and Malak flexes his hands, grips the edge of the holotable. It makes sense. It makes too much sense. Lord Revan, as you so aptly said, is the Sith Master. She should know how to treat her apprentice better if she wants his loyalty. Shouldn't she? Revan has earned his loyalty 1,000 times over. When they were Jedi. When they were children and then teenagers and then adults. But when they became Sith. When they wrapped themselves in the dark consciously for the first time. When they left behind the tombs on Korriban with Darth attached to their names, that was a rebirth. The past no longer mattered, a Sith ghost had told them, now that they had taken up the mantle of Sith Lord. Revan earned his loyalty. With her unshaking defense of him, and her smile, and her fingers tangled in his among the tall grasses. And Darth Revan threw away that loyalty when she named him Apprentice and drove a lightsaber at his face. The projections flicker for a moment, are replaced by a hollow of Revan herself. In her black and red robes, the Beskar mask she's chosen as her face, because she couldn't bear to be human anymore. And Malak takes a deep breath, lifts his mental shields higher, and lets his face stay blank as her own mask.
Malak,
she says, and there's hardly any emotion in her voice, even without the vocoder. She's steady, she's focused. Although he thinks she's enjoying herself. She always likes the challenge of unexpected battle, and the Republic hasn't given her much of that lately.
Do you read me?
Loud and clear,
he says stiffly, and she's barely waiting for him to answer before she's continuing.
The Jedi send a strike team to the Vengeance,
she says, which... Hadn't she already known? Unless Kareth's spies didn't tell her.
I need to deal with them. You have command.
She doesn't even wait for a response. The hollow just flickers out, the fleet projections returning, and a muscle works in Malak's jaw, and he grips the edge of the table tighter. She just assumes he'll take over for her. Doesn't even give him a chance to acknowledge it. And sure, he's her second in command, her apprentice. But that doesn't mean she can just... She takes you for granted,
Kareth says. And he's right. She's taken them for granted since long before they were Sith. Takes them for granted even though she tried to kill him. A surge of anger wells up within him, and Malak slams a hand down on the holotable, snaps sharply,
"Hold the Leviathan up even with the vengeance."
Revan is nudging against his mental shields, lightly, questioning, and he shoves her back.
"Go deal with your strike team,"
he tells her, somehow manages to keep all the bitterness and the hurt and the rage from spilling over his shields.
"It won't take long,"
she responds, too light, too cheerful, and she has no idea. And when did she stop being able to read him just as well as he could read her?
"Look, this is all the Jedi sent for me. I'm almost insulted."
And there's a flash. Four knights, and the Padawan he's heard so much about. Basta Lashan. They'll keep her busy. Kareth is right. This is an opportunity. And he'd be a fool not to take advantage of it. He refuses to only ever be known as Revan's shadow, who never did a single thing on his own. He refuses to be used, to be taken for granted. The galaxy will look at him, and they will see what he is capable of. That he is every bit Revan's equal. That he can and he will win without her help. He doesn't need Revan, but oh, she needs him. The bridge is staring at him. Some of them look afraid, some concerned, some eager. And he wonders if they know what's going on, if they've been expecting this, if they've been waiting for it like Bandon has, like his Sith have, like Kareth has. "My lord?" one of his officers asks, and Malak whirls, pins them in place with a stare more gold than blue.
"Do it,"
he nearly growls, and the mask's vocoder adds a threatening curl to his voice. And in that moment, he likes that. Likes the way the officer, a younger one who joined up near the end of the First War, flinches back just a little and goes pale.
"Yes, sir."
And they turn. And the order is repeated. And Malak turns and looks out the view screen at the Vengeance, hanging in space not too far from him. He can almost picture Revan on the bridge, staring down the Jedi, probably even smiling behind that mask. For a moment, for just a moment, he wishes he could see that smile.
"You're making a wise decision, Lord Malak," Kareth says. Malak doesn't take his eyes off the Vengeance's bridge.
"What are your orders, sir?"
another officer, a commander or something like that, asks. And Malak doesn't look at her.
"All turbo laser batteries, lock onto the Vengeance's bridge,"
he says. The weight of his anger and his hurt gives his voice a steady confidence. The same one he has heard from Revan since she first donned the mask. He hadn't understood then how she could be so steady all the time. But now he pours everything burning in his chest into his voice until he almost thinks the entire bridge must be able to feel it. Kareth is smiling. It's the same kind of smile he'd heard in Revan's voice when she'd drawn the Mandalorians into her traps, made her sacrifices, and won. And that... Malak hesitates. Kareth holds his eyes and that smile still curves around his mouth, and in a space beyond the Leviathan, the Republic is fighting back. And he looks like Refn. Like he planned this. Like this was all a trap. And how had Malak forgotten that Sol Kareth is, above everything else, motivated by power? Well, Kareth says, silky smooth. You know what you have to do, my lord. There's no turning back now. Hesitation doesn't become the Dark Lord of the Sith. He's already set this in motion. He's already given the orders. There will be no way to keep Revan from finding out about this. And she will not take it well. And the part of him that loves her is far overshadowed now by the part of him that wants to be free from her. But he doesn't. Killing her? Really? They've been more one person than two for 2 decades. And the bond between them is 10 times as deep as a training bond. No matter that he's been keeping it shielded for months, when it snaps, it'll be like half his soul is tearing away. And I'm always going to be with you. I promise. Lord Malak? The weapons officer asks. Malak is not the one who made that promise. Alec is. And Revan shattered Alec into 1,000 separate pieces and patched them back together into Malak when she dragged him with her into the tombs of Korriban. And he is not the one who left first.
Fire,
he says, and pulls up mental shields as thick as mountains. There's a pause. And then, outside the view screen, the Vengeance erupts into flame, into chunks of twisted durasteel, and even through his shields, Malak can feel the scorching heat, and it is agony racing through his mind, and there's one silent scream of Alec. And he clenches his jaw and freezes himself into stillness and pushes his shields higher, thicker, stronger, until the fire and the force is nothing more than a blur of warmth, until he can almost pretend it's Revan's mind warm and quiet against his. Instead of screaming, instead of reaching for him like they're children again, instead of desperate and drowning. The Vengeance, the pride and the terror of the Republic, is tearing itself into pieces, and the Republic fleet has stopped firing, and it's like the entire battlefield has gone as frozen as Malak has. Like no one can quite believe it's happened. Like no one can quite believe Malak, steady, loyal Alec, the shadow, the apprentice, the second, would reach for something more than Revan offered him. Malak almost can't believe it himself. The Republic reacts first. Their scattered fleet leaping into hyperspace. Objective accomplished, after all. Leaving behind tens of broken starships, venting fire and shrapnel and dead bodies. And Malak can't move. Can't breathe hardly. The frozen stillness, the only thing holding him upright. Oh, Force. What has he done? I'm sorry, Rev, he finds himself thinking, as though she could hear him now, as though it matters, because he gave the order and she's... I'm sorry. All hail Darth Malak, Dark Lord of the Sith, Saul Kareth says, voice ringing out into the bridge's silence. And it takes Malak too long to realize he's opened a channel to the entire fleet. Darth Revan is dead. Darth Malak has acted against his master in a time-honored Sith tradition, and he has succeeded. By rights, everything that belonged to Revan is now his, including this fleet and this empire. Does anyone object? For a long heartbeat, there's nothing. And then the entire bridge crew is coming to their feet, saluting. And he doesn't know who starts it, but
all hail Darth Malak
echoes around him. And Kareth is smiling again. And it is all Malak can do to keep himself from shattering in front of them all. I'm going to change the whole galaxy someday. And you're going to be right next to me, aren't you? Don't be stupid, Rev. I'm always going to be with you. I promise. No matter what happens, we're always going to be together. Nothing could ever change that. Revan is dead. At his own hand, the one who promised he'd never leave her. The one who would have torn apart the galaxy for her not so very long ago. Revan is dead, and Malak has killed her. And he thinks he killed a part of himself, too, with that order. Revan is dead, and now, so is Alec. All hail Darth Malak, indeed. The end. Author's notes. Yes, I know I should be working on Qantas. I'll get there eventually. I got smashed with Alec feels and just had to write them. I wrote this in one day and didn't edit it, so if it's bad, I'm sorry. I'm having too many feelings. Anyway, fuck Linkin Park. This is all their fault. I love them.
Reader's notes. So, just fucking tear my heart out with this, why don't you? Seriously, wasn't using it. It's cool. I don't know. I guess, Star Wars is always pending doom, but I feel like the story really captured the tragedy of this moment. Where, like, if tragedy is seeing the warning signs and not being able to turn away anyway because of, like, the inevitability of everything, you could see those moments where, like, if just one beat on Malak's inner monologue had just shifted slightly, we could have averted disaster. One moment, one realization, one... And, like, that's what they sacrificed to the dark side, right? That's what they lost when they, both of them, between Malak and Revan, took on the mantle of a Sith Lord. You have to give something up to get something back. And it's just like, from the outside, you can see, turn here. Keeps driving past. All right, fine, okay, off ramp here. Keep driving past. And then you got Saul Kareth in the passenger seat leaning on your leg as Malak fucking floors it off the edge of a cliff. And it just, it all feels like, maybe there's a way out, but to Malak, there's no other way except for this way forward. And that's what makes it a fucking tragedy. How are we supposed to work a reunion after the amnesia ends into this universe after all? I need my reunion of erotically codependent murder killers, war crimes in a trench coat. I need it. Anyway, so thanks to Revinkist for writing this, and also for dropping by my Tumblr inbox and being like, yo, I have a question. How does one normally go about having a podfic made of something they've written? And then, I just sort of took that ball and fucking ran with it. Yeah, thank you for listening. The story ends tearing your heart out. Now we must all continue to pester Revicus to give us the reunion of it all. Let them both, you know, maybe I don't quite forget, but eventually I also don't forgive, but we build something new going forward because we're both new people now. Please. Not the trauma. Not the only the unrelenting trauma. Anyway, yes, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. And have a nice day.
Yeah.